The Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the National Rugby League.
Yeah, you ready? Let's do it.
A little bit of fallout after Origin 1. Plenty of stars not backing up.
No, definitely not. Hello and welcome to the Final Play Podcast. We'll go through round 14. I might as well get straight into it because the first game was
disgusting.
Your Cowboys getting obliterated. No? Sorry? Your Cowboys getting obliterated by the Manly Seagulls, 50-18, in the newly named Four Pines Park. I think that's hilarious, that man. That was nearly my start of the week now. That's so good. Four Pines Park. I love it.
Four Pines Park. If you see all the expansion and everything that's going on there too. Like Brookies looked, I don't know, sort of, you know, sad and small for a long time. Like, you know, they've got the main grandstand and then that little bit of main stand. I don't know whether it's the southern or northern end, but, you know, on the right-hand side of the cameras, shall we say. But you have a look at the end goal up the other end, it looks like it's probably going to be the same. So it looks like it's going to be a good little refurb there.
That's what's happening in Cronulla as well. Like, they're all this money getting injected in there. They're trying to do what Brisbane did, basically, by the stand. Not so much the stadium size, but like the Excellence Centre and all the shops around it and all that kind of stuff. So,
that's their thing out there. It's a little sad that Sharkies fans aren't really travelling, because, you know, their home games at Cogra, crowd wise, is just, it's pathetic. There's no other way to put it. It's pathetic.
Even this one, this was only just under 7,000. But look, you don't have this, you know, you don't have the stars sort of backing up, or certain stars backing up. And it didn't seem, you know, not having Tom Dravojevic there didn't seem to bother Manly at all. They just, obviously at the start, you said that really, really, really good start the first 10 minutes. And I thought, what the hell's going on? But then Manly hit their straps. Really,
I was cheering, like, you know, after the 13th minute, you know, all the way up until the 50th minute, the Cowboys completed 4 of 11 sets. Manly just totally blew the doors off. And for me, the 100%, which is really weird to sort of say, but the 100% momentum switch was after the second try. You know, which was whatever, when it was, that was the eighth minute after the David Bowen try, the Seagulls went the sneaky short kickoff and got it back.
Yeah.
And that caught the Cowboys off guard, and that was a huge momentum swing. They basically scored not off that set, but off the next set after that. With Brad Parker opening up the Cowboys on their left hand edge, and it after Manly sort of looking shell shocked in that first 10 minutes, that really sort of, you know, flipped the script, so to speak, and it just went downhill then from the Cowboys. The Cowboys had 37% of possession in the first half, like after having all the run of the ball inside that first 10 minutes and scoring two relatively easy tries. They didn't look in the contest after that. It was unbelievable.
No. You're right. I felt it was a momentum switch, but I mean, in my head when I seen it, I questioned why are they doing this? But obviously they must have seen something on the field and seen that they weren't really, you know, like paying attention to their 10-meter line, and it clearly worked.
Absolutely.
So, absolutely.
And that's what
I love, that kind of thing. I do love that kind of thing.
Even with dropouts and stuff like that, if you can catch teams off guard, if they're just being super placid and laid back and just expecting the long kickoff, obviously, they'd seen something, and they're just like, hurry up, quick. Let's, you know, whether it was, you know, if it was a hand signal to somebody out on the flanks there to think about the short kickoff. And after that, it was just an absolute just pummeling.
Sure. Yeah. And like you
even,
didn't have.
Even so, the Seagulls scored pretty much sort of two tries inside that first 20 minutes. You know, after they got the ball back, but it was the four tries essentially in 9 minutes. It was three tries inside 6 minutes just before the half.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that just totally blew the doors off the game. And then for them to show, the Cowboys to show absolutely just zero steel in defense right off the bat, off the half time. And then Kieran Foran goes in the second minute of half time. It's just like, this game's over. It's over.
I just can't believe, like you said, how quickly it turned around and how quickly you guys, I mean, the Cowboys, we all know you follow the Cowboys, but how less possession you have, how many actual complete, not the completion rate was terrible, but actually how many, you know, you went from being red hot at the start to only then having at the end of the game only 33 actual sets of the ball. It was, compared to 44, it was just,
But when you have that, little amount of possession, that makes the ball even more precious, and you simply can't afford to make mistakes anyway. But to make the amount of mistakes that they did with the limited amount of possession that they had, you give yourself no chance at all to even getting back into the contest. At 28-12, you could almost say that it was gone from then, but as soon as Manly scored straight up after half time, that was it.
Yeah,
that was just straight up it. And I guess sort of the nail in the coffin was the Reuben Garrick essentially running coast to coast. It was like 99 meters that he ran, and it was just off just such an innocuous little grubber off Dearden. The only person that was chasing through was Reece Robson, who was chasing through hard. Once Robson missed the tackle, there was nobody in sight, and Reuben Garrick runs essentially 100 metres to score. It was unbelievable.
What the other thing I noticed in the game in terms of Manly was the Reuben Garrick thing. He's really like the kicking's there, but I wasn't his biggest fan last year, to be honest. I wrote him off kind of thing, but he's, in the space of not having Tom there, he has sort of stepped up for Manly. But
he's terrific.
For me, he nearly got my start of the week, but after an obliterating really loss against New South Wales, for Daly Cherry to come, Cherry Evans to come back and play like that, he played brilliant. Nah, he ran the ball so much, it was ridiculous. It's like he just had a thing in his head where maybe I didn't do this in Origin, I've got to run again. So he was brilliant, and he was pissed off. So,
well, and that could be, that's what it seemed like to me. He had a serious bee in his bonnet about, I guess, the criticism that come out after Origin. And that was the thing, it was coming from everywhere. And, Marty Tapau was great up front. Paseka is a good sort of front rower. I guess it's sort of starting to come in to his own after basically having to step up and fill the boots of Aiden Faneuil-Blake, who left to go to the Warriors.
Yeah.
Jake Trbojevic backed up from Origin, played 77 minutes. Like that. They had the luxury of Dylan Walker, and he ended up coming off the bench.
Yeah. The way Reuben Garrick's been playing, and you mentioned Dylan Walker as well, has while Tommy's been out injured before the Origin. Having those two guys that have been playing better has actually helped. So Manly. So
no, absolutely. The amount of missed tackles that the Cowboys had as well.
That's exactly what I was just about to say. Just what happened to Cowboys, and I was literally just about to say the amount of missed tackles and they just capitulated. Like you're right. Maybe it was that little kick.
So many times there was guys like that. I think it was Tom Gilbert. And they're coming in as the first initial tackler, and they're just trying to put a hit on.
Yeah.
Like, there's no trying to wrap up of the arms or anything of that, and Manly players are just bouncing off them left, right, and center. It's just like, dude, wrap the ball up. Go in for a tackle. Stop trying to be a hero and just trying to put on a big hit and trying to hit around the ball, or to try and I understand the precedence of or the precipice of it, and trying to force a mistake, but you're not helping yourself. Just go in and try and wrap the ball up and try and limit fast play the balls and try and limit the Manly's meters, because they just kept rolling through the middle so easily.
What I noticed, and I was going to ask you what you thought of Tom Dearden's first game, but I noticed just before you say anything that it really still at the moment, I think they blooded him in in terms of like they didn't let Scotty Drinkwater take control because he set up those three tries and he did most of the kicking. So before, I don't know what you thought of Tom Dearden's first game for the Cowboys.
Look, it's a feeling out process.
Yeah.
He's been at the club for a little bit more than a week. So it's going to take a little bit of time and this is why I didn't really like the switch, why they were waiting for, whether or not they were going to wait for the release of Dearden so they could release Clifford. And as much as I'm a little bit of a Clifford skeptic, I would much rather have Clifford in the side just purely for a chemistry point of view and a continuity point of view. Him and Drinkwater, they know each other's tendencies a little bit better than what Drinkwater and Tom Dearden do, who have been around each other for a week.
For the fact of that, you're still sitting, even after this loss, you're still sitting in the top eight. So
no, that's right.
That's what was, you're
right. We've got Canterbury to thank for that.
Yeah. But I understand that. But that's what I mean. Like you were right about Clifford and Drinkwater having that continuity. If you're in the top eight, like where you are now, pretty much going on halfway through the season. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think I would have broke that up. I would have just said, we'll do all the releases next year, personally. So
it's whether or not Newcastle were really pushing to get Clifford down there, and the Cowboys might have just got sick of the phone ringing and they're just like, screw it.
I was going to say, I wouldn't have done it unless if they had the run in with Townsend now, like they could have been half a force. I don't know if they're going to do it with Dearden, but personally, that would have been, imagine if you got a release for Townsend. Oh, that would be very, very interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Townsend and Dugan and that, as they said, there's hundreds of thousands of dollars in talent running around for the Newtown Jets.
Well, interestingly enough, that's the next game to talk about. They did beat a very depleted, Penrith Panthers 19-18.
Boy, they had that was a proper tale of two halves.
Yeah,
Cronulla looked really, really good in that first half, and Penrith looked again extremely disjointed with Tyrone May and Matt Burton at the halves.
I've got no problems with Matt.
The only person who backed up was Liam Martin.
Yeah,
everybody else was not there.
No, and that because Liam Martin obviously didn't play a lot of game, but I've got no problems with the way Matt Burton played, because
in that last 25 minutes, he put Penrith on his shoulders. Yeah. Man, he looked good.
Yeah, he's going to be a star, like for the Bulldogs, like if they do it right. But yeah, Tyrone May, I agree. Like Tyrone May was just a bit. I guess the word for me would be, he's not a great organizer. But Matt Burton, I mean, he's only 21. He'll go to the Bulldogs turning 22 next year. So he will be a star. He will be one of those guys. It'd be interesting to see. I'm just, like how Luai has sort of come at leaps and bounds. He could be, Matt Burton could well be a guy that could push Luai like out of that New South Wales. I think he has that potential. He's.
Look, and you see the way that he played last night, man. Like in that game.
Yeah.
He was everywhere, especially in that second half. They look frustrated and extremely disjointed in attack in that first half. But once they started to click, it was on.
It was.
Cronulla could not close the deal. Could not close the deal until the 78th minute.
Yeah. Having Sean Johnson there does sort of help, even though you're going to lose him next year. So,
that's funny. That's Johnson's first field goal in 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, and of all the and I'm sort of stealing this off 360. Out of all the talent, you know, in that halves area, that's not contracted next year, he's the perplexing one. All that talent that's, you know, your Burtons, your Milfords, your Ash Taylors, Sean Johnsons of the world, I don't think he's going to get the $1 million or whatever he was in on the Sharks, but I like Sean. Sean Johnson was their best player last year. So I'm not saying he has to play at the Sharks. I'm just surprised no one's picked him up yet, unless it's a money thing. Unless it is a money thing.
I would say that there would be some serious negotiations happening, because I could only assume that, you know, he will still think that he can command the large money, and there's the possibility that he's not quite worth what he thinks he's worth, so, or what his manager thinks he's worth. So the better he plays throughout this year could be the best thing for him.
Yeah.
That's just part of the deal. You're in the shop window. We'll get into that when we talk about St. George a little bit later on. And that's another thing that is absolutely what the talking point with Corey Norman being told.
Yeah, that he's another one.
Yep. And you'd think that along with Matt Duffy would try and spur these guys on into playing well, and that's not always what happens. Like, sometimes you can try too hard and everything goes wrong for you, and you hurt yourself, you know, with not being able to get a contract, and you hurt yourself monetarily. But
you kind of have
you're
to.
You're in the shop window. This is advertising now for you. Whether it's Sean Johnson, whether it's Josh Dugan, guys like that, Aaron Woods.
Well, no, I was going through the halves, like you said, Corey Norman, Milford, Taylor, Sean Johnson, Matt Moylan.
That's right.
So
it's all advertising. You go out there and play well, then by the end of the season, hopefully somebody has come out there and says, yes, we value you and we want you at our club.
Next game was a nail biter. You know, they're good seeing a couple of nail biters. Oh. I don't mind seeing them, but the Roosters. I mean, again, your What's the word you call it for Gold Coast? Your sentimental team. I think I'll use that word. But
I've got two sentimental teams, but they're my team of the past. That's who I supported as a kid growing up, was the Gold Coast Seagulls / Chargers. So
Same thing. This game went down. Same thing. The Roosters beat the Titans 35-34, and just on the back of another 78th minute field goal by an 18-year-old Sam Walker.
Unbelievable. First 18-year-old to kick a game-winning field goal since Craig Gower.
You were going to say his name. Craig Gower. I haven't heard that name for a long time.
Craig Gower. That was stunning when I heard that on the call. But, look, it started off, I guess, sort of like this, the same old shit for the Gold Coast. And, like, their first half was pretty shonky. And basically only getting, a Jamal Fogarty try just before halftime, I guess, just to sort of
a Jamal Fogarty running
just to keep him in the contest. But it was action stations in the second half.
That's the Jamal Fogarty I like, a running Jamal Fogarty.
That's why I think, he doesn't get to do that as much or as often when Tanner Boyd is there. Because I just don't think that there's the trust there with him. Whereas when he's got Ash Taylor there with him, he knows that when Ash Taylor is on, he's got the trust of him. And, he is a classy player, and you can show those glimpses of brilliance. But it just, even though, like, the second half started off even, like, horrendous for the Gold Coast, and being down 30 points to 4.
Yeah.
Within half an hour to go in the game, like 50 minutes into the game, and down 30 points to 4, and all of a sudden it's the spark of Marshke being binned. I don't know what happened.
Yeah,
it just
totally
lit the fire under the Gold Coast, and they've realized it's like, hey, they got pretty much got a try straight up. So it was just before Maskey got sent off, Fogarty scored. Yeah. Maskey gets sent off, you know, gets sent for 10 in the next set of six. And they scored three. That's what I mean. They scored three tries while he was off. They just kept the momentum going, and the Roosters didn't know how to handle it.
Well, what did you think of that send off?
Ordinary.
Yeah,
ordinary.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to go into all of them because I didn't want anybody. Yeah, I thought the same thing.
It was innocuous.
You're right. They couldn't. That was a spark because they just couldn't. They were basically sort of shell shocked because they were not. Yeah. They were coming down. There was like four unanswered tries up until that 72-minute. The Ikavalu one killed
them. The Kevin Proctor try was so lucky. That ball just sat up absolutely perfect for him to just scoop it up and essentially fall over the try line where Daniel Tupou was right there, and you see his hand sort of come out to try and bat the ball away, and he's just that fraction of a second too late. Proctor scoops it up. Scores the try, and they go ahead. You know, they go ahead 34-30. But to let the Roosters in within a couple of minutes, straight after they take the lead, you're like, oh my god, like
that Ikavalu try was a killer. Yeah, that was a killer.
Can't let this happen. And then Walker misses the kick from the sideline, and you're like, oh, here we go. And then two crucial errors by the Gold Coast coming out of their own half just gifts the Roosters field position to be just to be able to work into a set where they can take the field goal, and Sam Walker just it didn't even look like it was going to miss. Struck
didn't.
It well. He had family and friends and stuff in the crowd.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable.
So did a young Jaden Campbell. Being his first game playing where
first
his
Coast, fir- right. yeah, exactly.
father, Preston Campbell, obviously, the great Preston Campbell for the Gold Coast, played. So, and he, God damn, he looks exactly he looks like, except for tall and skinny.
There's a little bit of height disparity, but
yeah, there's definitely a height disparity, but God damn, he looks like him, and he moves like him, and he puts his body on the line like him too, I noticed. He stopped a couple of tries.
I'm not sure what your sort of thoughts were about the Angus Crichton sort of, you know, after when he scored in the 18th minute as he sort of got that break and he's looking at Jaden Campbell and poking his tongue out and, you know, acting sort of as if you're going to tackle me, little man. And Campbell nearly got him. Yeah. He would have looked like a prize dickhead. Yeah. If he's done that and just totally backed himself and Jaden Campbell had to stop them before the line, he would have looked like a clown and it would have been terrific. That would have been awesome. That was 100% going to be my stud of the week if Jaden Campbell had to pull him down or strip the ball or stop him before he got to the line, because he clearly thought that Campbell had no chance of getting him. And you could see once he'd sort of pulled him to the ground just before the try line, I reckon Crichton had a little bit of uh-oh, but it was just enough for him to slide over and score the try. That just would have been so perfect if Campbell had to pull him down.
He's all 80 kilos of him, so
I don't even think he's that. I think he's like 76 kilos. Ring him wet.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
That's the thing. Like, and back in the day, like Preston Campbell was, even when he was playing for the Sharkies, and even for Penrith, like, he was totally one of my favorite players back in the day. And then when he got signed to the Gold Coast Titans, when you know him and Luke Bailey were the first two signings when the Gold Coast had announced that they were coming back into the competition, and they were two of the guys that went, yeah, absolutely, want to go to the Gold Coast, you know, establish ourselves. And that, you know, they were, you know, stalwarts of the Gold Coast when they came back into the competition as the Titans entity. But yeah, Preston Campbell and Luke Bailey were all in, you know, to put their hands up and go straight up. Yep. Got no equivocations with signing with the Gold Coast. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. they were past their prime, but they absolutely were, you know, rock solid for that Gold Coast side, and you know, for Jaden Campbell to play with the club that you know that his father did is you know is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how many looks he'll get there. I mean, during the year, but I mean, obviously next year he'll have his foot in the door. Obviously, probably not a fullback, but in you know in the centres or the wing, because he's probably needs a little bit more beef. But he's got you know he's got the hype for a wing centre sort of you know. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's right. And I think it's just a point of necessity at the moment because they've tried the Gold Coast have tried Philip Sammy at fullback. It doesn't work. You're not gonna put you know, somebody like an Anthony Don or a Brian Kelly at fullback, that's totally not going to work. So for them to sort of bring in Jaden Campbell and just to get, I think it's just a matter of giving him that first grade experience, what the training regime is like. I could absolutely see him being, and you could slot, you could move Philip Sammy over one and play center and have Jaden Campbell out on the wing and be, you know, I guess that sort of professional try scorer out wide. And like you said, you know, he's a bit of a string bean, but he's tall. And that will I guess advance his first grade credentials if he can get out on the wing and be that sort of tall target, you know, for kickers, whether or not it's going to be Ash Taylor and Jamal Fogarty, but, you know, for their halves to be that tall target. You know, a la a Daniel Tupou or a Jason Saab along those sorts of lines.
Next game was the Rabbitohs beating the Knights 24-10. On the back of my, you know, I've been every week I've been checking if the top try scorer is coming up on Sportsbet and it hasn't because the second it does. I've no equivocation of not picking Alex Johnson. I don't care where he's sitting.
Alex Johnson, straight up.
He's probably going to be favorite, but I'm just going to put it on him straight away because I do not care. I said it from the start, and I wish there was odds at the start, but clearly there isn't. There's top point scorer, but there's still not the the top try scorer.
He's a professional try scorer. Like we just said, what Jaden Campbell could possibly be. He's just a professional try scorer.
He really is.
He's unbelievable.
And he can break a line too.
How easy did the Rabbitohs cook the Knights on the outside?
Yeah.
Well, in the third minute.
Yeah. I was gonna say. I mean, obviously that, but Luttrell had a really good game considering he was backing up. I'm very surprised he did back up. He had a pretty his sort of hand and that, like getting on the outside, that was not all of it, but it was a lot from him, like even those line breaks. So no, I'm surprised he backed
South had a lot of guys not backing up. Jaden Sewer backed up, but they didn't have Jai Arrow. They didn't have Gagai. They didn't have Murray. They didn't have Cook. So
I'm surprised Preston did purely for the fact of he had a pretty massive game in the Origin in terms of run meters and you know, being literally everywhere like one Tom Dvojevic. So,
no, that's right. I thought Benji Marshall defended really well in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
You know, in slotting into that into that dummy half role for Damian Cook. And I thought he was solid. I think that was going to be you would have thought that would have been a game plan for the Knights was to try and run at Benji as much as humanly possible with you know with the likes of the Saifidi twins and guys like that, but look, he held his own really well up the middle, and I think that might have stunted Newcastle a little bit. Look, they just didn't quite have, I guess, the guns to take advantage of the amount of possession that the Knights had throughout this game. Yeah. They couldn't capitalize on a few mistakes that South's made, and South's defended their 20-meter zone and their try line so well. It was just a phenomenal defensive effort more than the attack for South, which we know that they can put on a scoreline. And yeah, Newcastle have been ordinary as of late, and they could have let this game get away. And it was just their second half that their options, just the way that they I think they tried a little too hard. Once they sort of let South get out to that 24-10, which was the end score, that they just tried to push things a little bit too hard and not let things flow a little bit, which happens when you're behind by three scores.
I'll be like, I think I've now seen enough of Newcastle. I mean, they're not going to make the top eight this year. I think it's pretty evident. I've seen enough.
They have got a plethora of troops coming back next week. Clemmer, Ponga, Pierce. They've got a lot of big guns coming back next week, but I don't think that's not the magic. That's not the magic potion.
No,
they've got to work themselves back into, you know, back into first grade. Clemmer's missed a couple of weeks now. Ponga's missed a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
Pierce has been out for 2 months. So it's going to take them a little while to sort of get back into football form and football condition. So
I just wanted to say with Newcastle, three big guns. What else are they actually missing?
I think a bit of experience in their back line. They've got guys like Bradman who got hurt in this game. Bradman Best is only young.
He's regressed a little, just a little.
Oh man, he set the bar for himself so high last year.
He did, because he was a New South Wales centre.
It's natural regression, he's been hurt. He's only played nine or ten first grade games this year, so he's been hurt a little bit. So I think the stop start of him playing first grade this year has hurt him a little bit. They've got Irani Tuala, who's fairly young, who's in the Cowboys system up here. But he's young. Yeah, Heimel Hunt has been in and out of first grade. They've got Stafford Toa, out on the flanks there. He's only young. Dominic Young, the massive he's replacing. He's only a replacement wing. I think that they just need a little bit more experience. They've got the strike, but they're not as first grade clever as, do you know what I mean? They're not that, you know, when things are going well for Newcastle, then those guys will shine. But when things are tough, that's when you get that test of character. And I think that these and to say, the days are gone of Newcastle being, the perennial whipping boys like they were a few years ago. They're a much better side, but these guys need that experience. I think their forward pack is great. Jaden Brayley's terrific.
I think that their entire, from 8 to 13 is brilliant. And you mentioned Brayley. Yeah, that's not their problem. Yeah, right. It could be a halves depending on what Mitchell Pierce is doing next year. But the centre actually makes sense because Kalen sewed up the fullback for the next couple of 10 years.
That's right. And he's experienced now. Kalen Ponga's got enough first grade experience. His health.
Yeah, centre would be not a bad – like a seasoned centre. You're right, not a young –
I think it's center and wing. It's just a lot of youth there, and they've got potential, and it's just not quite showing at the moment. When they're in those clutch moments of the game, they're not really standing up. When their backs are against the wall, they're not really sort of putting their hand up a lot to take those charges out of dummy half when they're on their own 10-meter line to try and give those forwards a rest. They come up with mistakes in their own half a lot, and that's a massive problem.
Next game was the Raiders beating the Broncos 38-16.
I mean, there's nothing like a game against the Broncos to spark the Canberra Raiders into a second half form, really.
Yeah.
It's the perfect remedy, is it not?
Yeah, talk about a team that, is like I just said with Newcastle, it's sort of where are they going? What are they missing? Mismatch. I mean, they end up, Carmichael Hunt was their starting 5'8" of all people,
And I just thought that was such a strange move, to have, granted Carmichael Hunt has been playing in the halves at the Q Cup, that Jermaine Asako is clearly out of favour at the Broncos. Carmichael Hunt made his name as a fullback at the Broncos. To me, it's just such a natural, a better fit to put Carmichael Hunt in that fullback position. And if you don't think that Jermaine Asako is your fullback going forward, then you either put him in the wing or you dump him down to reserve grade. Don't leave him hanging and clutching onto a first grade spot if they don't believe that he's up for it. If he's not their fullback of the future, which I don't think they believe he is, because they were trying hard for Nico Hines, they're trying, as far as I know, they're still after somebody along the lines of Matt Dufty. So why string him along?
Yeah, no, look,
Carmichael Hunt would be the perfect fit to play to play at fullback.
Yeah, I agree. I just I don't know what he's done wrong personally. I haven't seen, his defense isn't great, and he's probably not going to. You got Xavier Coates. He's probably not going to be a fullback, but I don't think he's a terribly bad player considering what they've got in front of him now.
He's not, but just this year, and even going into last year, his brain farts are, man, they're monumental. Like they cost points. Like all you got to do is just be a victim of recency bias. And what happened last week on the stroke of halftime, and him just being so blasé from a kick off the scrum. Yeah. And then Matt Dufty comes through and pulls his pants down, and then by the end of the game he doesn't play the last 15 minutes because he gets the hook.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's true.
And he doesn't even play in this game. So clearly he's lost the trust of Kevin Walters.
Look, we might as well give praise to the Raiders. It was a good, like you said, like at the start, it was a good win by them. And, nothing better than going up against the Broncos side to, I guess, instill some confidence back into you.
Right. And they were great in the second half.
They were great. They were great in the first half and then finally in the second half. Exactly.
Yeah. That's been the Raiders' problem for 75% of this year has been their second halves.
I think there was only two that I'd noticed, or one or two, but they've won the first half nearly every single game. It's just their second half, like we said.
That's right. In this game too, like Brisbane, for most of that first half, were looking, getting out of their own half.
Yeah.
Made it look extremely difficult, and their meters gained was pretty poor. And I thought Canberra's, they made going up the middle look very easy.
Yeah, no, Canberra did definitely. I mean, that was for me on the back of Papali'i. I don't know. Is he starting to come back to that sort of, I don't know about form, but the way Papali'i usually plays. I hate saying it like that, but that's how he wants it. So, his run meter is 178.
Paul Papali for the last 7 years.
Yeah, I don't get it changing, but anyway.
How do you let your name be mispronounced, slide for that long?
I honestly guarantee it's got something, and I want to delve more into this. Like I said, I'm going to look it up, delve more and then study up on it. I bet you it'd have something to do with this whole
thing or something. I don't know.
It'd have something to do with this whole Tonga Samoa. Samoa thing that's going on, trying to get Samoa on the map and all that. I guarantee it's got something to do with that. But anyway, The kid that I liked in that game was, slotting in at fullback was Bailey Simonson.
Simonson was great at fullback.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, I think he's sort of cured those ails. And there's the possibility that he could be the fullback for the rest of the season.
Well, yeah, I mean, because Nick Kotrick's out at the moment, isn't he?
Charles Nicol-Klock's out. I don't think that by the sounds of it, they don't think he's coming back this year.
I don't know if
they've tried Caleb Akins there at fullback, and while he was, I guess, the backup there at Penrith, looks like that Simonson has overtaken him as Ricky Stewart's trust.
I think Mikkel Kokstak's lost some sort of faith there. I don't know. I think something's happened there with him as well. I don't.
Well, I just don't think he's coming back. I don't think he's coming back as well from that concussion that he had however long
ago. That's true.
He must be responding to whether it's to treatment or to, and they must just be resided to the fact that there's the possibility that he may not be playing again this season. And with the way that Simonson is playing, to me, he's already in house, and I think that totally squashes the rumors of Matt Dufty going to the Raiders.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, now there's all rumours about them about a halfback now, because obviously they'll have that George Williams money freeing up. So, yeah, you're right. I like the way he played. I mean, he got the most run meters, clearly, you know, pretty easily got the most run meters, pretty elusive kind of player. I think if they can keep doing this, it's all good. I just wondering just if for this is Jack White and I'm sort of going, you know, he did get a try, but is you think him being number 14 has lost, he's instilled a little bit of, you know, his disinterest, maybe is probably a word to use. I don't know.
No, look,
he doesn't possibly seem electric. Maybe because
that's the thing.
Year.
Once again, I think he's a victim of his own success. He's set the bar high for himself.
Yeah.
When he's in good form and he's playing well, then the bar it's almost Michael Morgan syndrome when he had that unbelievable run taking the Cowboys to the 2017 Grand Final. The form that he was in was so unbelievable and electric. You can't capture that lightning in a bottle again, and that could possibly be what's happening with Jack White.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's still a brilliant player, and he's still.
Yeah.
I think he can change it around. It's just, I don't remember seeing him at all that Origin game. To be honest, I should have looked at his minutes, but
it wasn't many. Look, he come on.
He didn't need to.
No, he didn't need to, but he came on when Cleary came off for the blood bin, and he didn't last too much longer in the second half. I honestly don't think he played a whole lot. I'll have to double check his minutes. But yeah, if he played 15 minutes, I would have been surprised.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah, no, that's highly possible. So
look, I guess the other big thing in this game too was the sending off of Kobe Hetherington, I guess. I was in the belief of the same as the commentators that it's a total accident.
Uh-huh.
He's been tripped. Corey Harawira-Naira was tripped up essentially with an ankle tap, and he's falling, and his face has basically met Kobe Hetherington's shoulder. He hasn't gone in with forceful. If he's just running, if Harawira-Naira is running upright and is not ankle tapped, his face isn't hitting Hetherington's shoulder. It's just not. So to me, it's 100% not worthy of a send off.
No.
I was stunned when he was sent off.
You were. But I think that he was definitely stunned.
The way this week has been policed, even for him to get 10 minutes in the bin was staggering. If it had been 10 minutes in the bin. But yeah, the referees have totally, I guess, sort of fallen off a cliff. And the policing of the head knock and the head high has totally fallen by the wayside this round, due to the fact of the limited amount of number, the limited number of send offs and sin binnings this week. And there's that narrative out there that the NRL's gone soft and straight up, you know, off you know what happened in Magic Round and the subsequent rounds afterwards, that the way that the policing of the head knock has totally gone away.
Well, Graham Annesley has come out and said, I think because of that, well, because of this week, I think, is that it's then they're sticking to what they're doing. I mean, I don't know if it had a little bit to do with how it was sort of played out in Origin. So, and it was a lot.
The way it is. Like, Carfeld, if they were going off, Magic Round and the next round, Carfeld, that hit on Cameron Murray, that's 10 minutes in the bin. Like, you got to be kidding me, right? Do they expect people to believe that the players are adjusting that much? It's like they're still head high, and they're accidents. They're head high tackles, but they're just not being binned for it. Like, that's total BS for Annesley to come out and expect the people to believe that it's still being policed the same way. It's just not.
No, it isn't. No, you're right. It just isn't. So there doesn't seem to be. It was in that Magic Round. It was very, very consistent.
No, it was ridiculous. While the number of headshots, may have gone down, but they haven't reduced as much. That there's only what like three sin binnings this round. Like the play that there's still, if I guarantee, if you go back and watch every single game this week, there would be only a slight percentage reduction in the amount of penalties given for head high hits. I guarantee it.
Yeah. No, that's and that's true. But it's the milking that I don't like, because you can sort of slowly see
and
it.
That's exactly right. And we said this a couple of weeks ago, that this is going to set a precedence, because the penalty now is so valuable.
Just purely
because of that fact that players, they're not going to be able to help themselves. And if they want to go out there, oh, this stuff isn't coached, I wouldn't think it would be coached, but it's in the player's mind. And in the heat of battle, if you're if you're only down two or down four, and you know that you can get yourself a nice, easy, cheap penalty, and you're in your own half, and this is going to give you a good 40 meters downfield and get in good attacking position, players, it's a split second decision. They're not going to be able to help themselves but to feign an injury and stay down. There's been so many instances already in the last few weeks of crusher tackles that are nowhere, the player's neck is not being moved at all. I think Tino, I'm pretty sure it was this week against the Roosters, his neck didn't snap around at all, except he's flopping around on the ground like he's been shot by a sniper in the crowd, that it's hit him in the neck, and he's like, oh my God, my neck, I've just broken my neck. And then all of a sudden they get a penalty, and he bounces up off the ground, and you're just like, come on.
A sniper in the crowd. Yeah, no, that's true.
Well, that was the thing. It happened in the Bulldogs-Dragons game.
Yeah.
Blake Laurie gave Jack Hetherington an almighty spray after a so-called hit to the face, and he let him have it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he definitely did. Yeah, that was
He lost respect for him.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
He let him have it.
Yeah, but in Jack Hetherington's defense, because he's been getting targeted all the time about what he's doing in terms of the head highs and everything.
Well, he brings that on himself, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, he does. Moving on to the next game, the Storm look obliterated. It doesn't matter, really. I know we say it all the time. It doesn't matter who's backs up, who's out, who's anything for the Storm. It's like they have a clone for every position, and then those clones all just step up, and they did. It was 42-16.
Absolutely.
It was Ken Mamalo's last game, and his last game he had a hat trick of tries in his last game for the Warriors.
This is the first game that he's played in a while too. So he scored a hat trick, I guess inside 20 minutes as well in the game. This game to me was just clinical domination. That's the only two words that I could bring up with, but that's the Melbourne Storm.
Yeah, that's the Melbourne Storm.
That's just the way that they play, and they're doing that, and this has catapulted them to the top of the ladder now.
Yeah.
You know, with a couple of losses in a row with Penrith and Melbourne, not so much under the radar, but, with all the hoopla and all the hype around Penrith, now Melbourne are on top of the ladder.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
This is the kind of performance that they do. When they've got you down, they won't take the foot off the throat. They won't go easy on you. They will lay the boot in, and they don't care who it is.
No, they don't care who it is. I do like that it's still clinical, but it still has that nice bit of, it's not Cameron Smith clinical, it's Cameron Munster clinical, which has that little bit of free flowing sort of play, which I prefer personally.
Well, it's Craig Bellamy clinical.
Bellamy is probably the best way.
It's those principles that have been instilled in the players that have been there for so long that it's just second nature, and they know that what they do, their systems work, and they stick to those, and it just flows on. Speaking of Cam Munster, I think he might be in a little bit of strife again after lashing out twice in 2 weeks. We all know what he did in Origin, lashing out with the boot. But he also sort of lashed out again with the lower leg. I'm not sure what sort of your opinion is on that, whether it was malicious or not. But
Didn't seem
the
malicious.
The origin one was 100% not malicious. It was a push out with the leg. It wasn't, you know, as if he's trying to, you know, boot a mangy dog, you know, off the street or anything like that. Like, you know, he's just trying to push him away because he absolutely resented the hit that was put on him by Liam Martin in the origin. But this one, I don't know. I don't think there was too much different with this one.
I don't think so. No, I definitely didn't think so. It didn't to me look like it was malicious at all. I didn't think it was.
Is he a dirty player?
No.
I mean, I don't think so. But, you know, the people always want to come back and bring up the double sin binning, you know, in the grand final a few years ago. And it's just like, look, I think there's just a lot of unnecessary pressure and a lot of unnecessary scrutiny on Cameron Munster.
Oh, of course there is. And by the looks of it, it doesn't seem to bother him at all. Literally.
He doesn't give a crap.
He doesn't give a crap, which is good. So no, but that's a good thing because it could play to him. He's only still 26 years old, but you know, it doesn't play to him at all. So, no. God, we're just clinical. Like we just like you just said with the ladder, like it's our form's great. Our points differential is the best in the league.
That's why they're on top of the ladder at the moment is purely on pouring against.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, we're only talking literally 9 points, but
is what it is. If it comes down to the end of the season, and even if it's 1 point,
you've still got
a better for and against. So
yeah, that's exactly right. So, I mean, they've got the Tigers this week, so sorry Tigers, but Marlowe's gonna play them twice and go, Jesus Christ.
Exactly. It'd be like, God damn, I'm sure I played these guys last week. But anyway,
Panthers have got the Roosters, so that'll be a very interesting game.
Yeah, that's the Friday night game.
Yeah, that's actually
with all the stars back for Penrith. I could only assume that Tedesco will be back again this week. He didn't.
That'll be a full squad.
So that's going to absolutely be a blockbuster on Friday night.
Next game, speaking of the Tigers, you know, going down to the Eels, 40-12.
This was, I guess, to me, was set up by Gutherson and the likes of that in the first half.
Yes.
Look, they were really good in the first half. I thought they were better in the second half, but they just sort of, I think they just ran the Tigers around a little bit too much, and I think they were just had no energy, I think, in that second half. But Penrith are 7-for-7 this year when scoring the first try.
Mm-hmm.
So once Gutherson went over early, I guess you could sort of say that's all she wrote, but, you know.
And a player that would be honestly like after this game is saying, you know, don't forget about me, New South Wales Blues. As great as the squad is, and probably won't get changed. Like I'm sure, going from this game, he would have been said, yeah, you know, I'm still around. I'm still a great player.
Sure. The only way he's getting in there the way that New South Wales is playing is through injury.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
But you would think that he would be first cab off the rank. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't have any doubt in my mind. What did you think of his? It always gets blown out of proportion, but his little chat with Mitchell Moses during the game.
Look, I didn't see a whole lot in that. I'd seen a difference in ideologies on what both of those players wanted to do on that stoppage of play. And Moses, I guess, sort of wanted to pour the pressure on, and then, you know, Gutho's just had to come out and just sort of settle him down a little bit and just say, look, you know, just calm the farm, let's just take this as it comes. Let's be, you take a leaf out of Melbourne. Let's be clinical. Let's think about this. Let's not just go off raw emotion. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, you didn't have to be the most expert of lip readers to see that it was F off Gutho. You could see that he was clearly, you know, a little upset with him, but there's no dissension or anything there. People out there, oh, you can't talk to your skipper that way. It's just like, well, no, you can. If they've got the kind of relationship as players that you can be as frank and honest like that, but you know, cooler heads will generally prevail, and that's what Gutherson was trying to provide.
Mike Acevo's penalty slash dangerous tackle slash sin bin was, well, that was obviously to me. I know, I thought that was pretty clear cut. You didn't think so?
No, like, yeah, you're right. It was pretty cut and dry, I think. I don't think that there was anything sort of untowards there.
There
wasn't
malice in it, but it definitely, and the other one as well, you read it to say Papali'i's?
That's right.
Yeah, I thought both of the Eels ones were justified personally. So.
I think Papali'i, has he escaped suspension for this? I do believe that he may have escaped suspension for this, which I
than early guilty.
I don't want to say that it's deliberate, but I think it was deliberate.
Yeah, no, he actually. Yeah,
I think he knew what he was doing, dropping the knee down on Luciano Leilua. I think 100% he knew what he was doing.
Oh, of course he did.
There was a reason why he got sent to the bin, right?
It felt like, to me, it felt like a buddy. Yeah, he knew what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing. I'm surprised. Yeah, it sort of got like left off or to the wayside. Mike Acevo, you know, all he got was his fine, which I, you know, that's a weird amount. $1,150 fine. I don't get that. So
yeah, I don't know how they come up with the BS of fines and stuff like that. I don't know how they do that.
I think he should have got time. I mean, Mike Acevo got 1 week because he an early guilty plea. So, but yeah, Papali'i's. It sure looked like a wrestling knee drop to me even. Not the famous Ric Flair sort of rolling knee drop. It wasn't something like that, but that'd have been awesome.
It was definitely a drop of the knees there. Maybe a Triple H drop of the knees instead of an
Triple H one. Actually, that's pretty fair. You know, not a Ric Flair roll through and make a big spectacle of it. I love when he does that.
Yeah, but there was definitely an element of professional wrestling there. That's for sure. maybe not so much on the reaction, because Luciano Leilua looked genuinely in distress after that got dropped on his cheek, but. You know, and that
I thought it caught a bit of the head too, to be honest. Not just his cheek, but the cheek is part of your head. But
that
still.
Absolutely wouldn't have tickled. But look, Mitchell Moses in this game was terrific. Look, he had a bit of a bomb try in that first half, and boy, his poker face sold that he absolutely scored the try. But he dropped the ball just as he was about to plant it, and then it was essentially a 12-point turnaround right before halftime. They could have gone into halftime at 20 points to nil, and it ended up being 14-6, you know, with Jacob Little scoring pretty much right under the sticks on that very next set after Moses dropped the ball in the in goal. So that would have given the Tigers a little bit of, a little bit of buoyed spirits, I guess, going into the half. But
yeah,
Moses, that try that he scored, that he actually scored, that 60-meter run, massive line break, and then he just throws a big, dirty, rotten dummy to Dane Laurie, and then just scorched him with speed. That was unbelievable. Like, that was crazy.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the Eels to me, I guess. Well, I don't know. Like, they're there or thereabouts. I just. Not that they're not missing anything. I like the makeup of their side. I think it's probably those big games, possibly.
Look, they beat Melbourne in round two, so you know, let's not sort of discount that. I think they know how to put away and knock off the average slash poor teams, and they're doing that very well. It's going to be the fact of when they sort of come up against the big guns, how well they can play under duress and under pressure and under constant pressure, which what those bigger sides, you know, those more consistent sides, you know, whether it's the Rabbitohs, and they've sort of shown inconsistencies this year, but it's when they come up against the likes of, your Penriths and your Melbournes is if they can, you know, maintain the rage and, you know, keep a cool head and to try and get the win, especially once it comes to the pointy end of the season.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But at the moment, look, they're putting away, and this game is a prime example. They're putting away the teams that they should be putting away.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, no, they are, and that's what they need to keep doing.
I think they had a blip on the radar a bit early in the season where they got out-muscled by St. George.
St. George,
and, a little bit, and that's when St. George had that sort of 2 weeks or 3 weeks of just, we're just going to beat the living crap out of you. They did it to Newcastle over the Easter period, and I think it was the next week after that where they sort of sprung it on Parramatta, and you know they were just sort of the Dragons just had unrivaled physicality in those couple of weeks, but they've severely dropped off. But I think that's sort of been the only blip on the radar when it comes to when it comes to Parramatta. But yeah, once their true test will be once it comes down to the later rounds and then once they get into the finals.
The final game was the Bulldogs beating the Dragons 28-6.
What an upset on Queen's birthday, public holiday. That was that just, and so many, this is the thing that was sort of funny about this too. So many people that were in tipping comps would have been, oh my God, we're sitting on seven tips. And they would have been like, whoo, this game is in the bag. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, coming into the last game of the round, and the Bulldogs went, no, we're going to screw everybody's perfect round up. And we're going to, that was Canterbury's best game in a couple of years.
It was Jake Averillo's game the best game I've ever seen him play personally.
Yeah, that's right.
So, because another person I effectively, and still not writing, we didn't write him off, but effectively.
Yeah, no, I did.
Yeah,
I'll put my name to it.
I didn't write him off. I don't think he's their future, even though he's 20 years old. I just said I don't think he's their future. So it's probably, that probably is writing him off. So
their future is running around at reserve grade, and their future is playing in the centres at Penrith. That's their future.
Running around in reserve grade, and their other futures.
Yes, Flanagan is absolutely their future.
And their other futures, playing on the wing for Melbourne and playing on the wing for New South Wales too. So
that's right.
God, they're gonna have a good side next year. They're gonna be a sleeper.
That's right.
They really are gonna be a sleeper. If they got Cotridge still there, you know, like it's probably their forwards. Like I mean, we've talked about this before, but they're. What do you think of Jack Hetherington? Is it just too much of him? I don't know.
He's a firebrand. He may have a little bit of intensity issues, but if he can sort of control that a little bit better, then I think he'll be a good prop forward. But you know, if he's going to be as Charlie Murphy says, a habitual line stepper, then he's going to miss a lot of football.
Charlie Murphy. Yeah, no, he will. No, you're right, he will. And this was pretty sort of clear cut with this game. Like Jake Averillo really just controlled every facet of the game, literally. That's how it looked.
Anthony Griffin challenged his side. He challenged the Dragons at half time to step it up. You know, they're only down 8-6 at half time, but he could see. Well, to me, I think he could see the writing was on the wall that they were well below their best in that first half. And he challenged them at halftime, and they absolutely did not respond because Averillo scored pretty much straight up on straight the first set of six up the halftime. That was a massive shot in the foot to the Dragons and their confidence.
Yeah, that's exactly right. May as well ask again because I've asked for a couple of games, Josh Jackson's sin binning.
No,
I didn't want to have to go into it, but it was offside, really. So it's kind of it's an innocuous thing. You know, he's a guy
that, easy pickings.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's a guy that he's just not talked about that much anymore, is he? I mean, we both like him. I'm not saying
no, absolutely not. Look, you know, people who you know, follow the footy as fanatically as what we do, we know what he brings to the table. Yeah. And it's just, it's unfortunate that he's been, I guess, sort of a forgotten man at the Bulldogs just purely on the fact that how rotten they've been the last couple of years. Like, he's been hurt a lot this year too. And now that he's, I don't think it's any coincidence, no coincidence that he's come back into the side over the last month or so, and they've actually started to look okay. Like, scoreboard and results haven't really looked extremely favorable for the Bulldogs, but a couple of weeks ago, you know, everybody was telling that they were just going to get, you know, their face blown off by Penrith, and, you know, only by just pure just brain explosion by Dalla Martini-Zalesniak that gifted the Penrith Panthers a try right on halftime, that they were only down 10-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
You know, they should have only been down 4-0 at halftime to Penrith. And, okay, the score was, 30 points to 4 at the end of it, but people were touting them to win by 40, 50.
And, yeah, that's exactly right.
They showed a little bit of resolve, and they showed that they could, you know, step up to the big games. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Josh Jackson's been back and they've been better.
Yeah, no, I that's totally fair. Yeah, I would definitely say that. Our studs and duds of the week, starting with your stud.
Look, I almost gave it to Luke Thompson of the Bulldogs. He was massive in this game, and that's one of the best games that I think he's played. Since coming to Australia. So I almost gave it to him, but to me, I will say Manly, and purely on the fact that, you know, that they had a reason to capitulate in that first 15 minutes or so against the Cowboys. They totally had a reason to capitulate. But they had that short drive, they had that short kickoff, they got on the front foot, and they just totally blitzed the Cowboys for the rest of their game, who haven't been in all that bad a form
No, they haven't. Well, they're in the top eight.
The Cowboys would have had a little bit of confidence going into this game. It's really funny as well, is that the last three times the Cowboys have been to Brookie, they've won. And the last three times that the Seagulls have come up to Townsville, they've won. So I guess the Seagulls sort of bucked the trend, I guess, a little bit. But after the 14th minute, it was just a total railroading by Manly, just putting on just an unbelievable amount of points and making it look extremely easy without their catalyst in Tom Trbojevic.
That's exactly right. Oh my God, when we put up the Origin pod, wait till we talk about Tom Trbojevic. It's Tom Trbojevic. And we said that before. We said that before the Origin. Mine went to he nearly got it last week, but he did the same thing this week. And that is Jarrad Waurea-Hargreaves. He did the rare. Well, I think it's rare. Well, it depends how you look at it. But he did the rare top tackle and top run meters 2 weeks in a row.
Especially for a prop.
2 weeks in a row. So he did this last week against the Raiders when he obliterated them. And also, especially for a prop, and especially for a prop that's, again, doing 80-minute games. So he 42 tackles, 221 run meters, 80 minutes, you know, 2 weeks in a row to top the tackle count and to top the most run meters. He's evergreen because he's getting up
and
there.
He's standing up for the Roosters.
Yeah.
When he's needed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they've got a plethora of injuries. They've had three retirements this year.
Yes, the Roosters. They have.
And we'll get into the Boyd Cordner retirement in a minute. But they've had three retirements this year, and he's, like you said, it's evergreen. He's as good as he's ever been.
And he's North of 30 as well.
And I think the stint for a little bit there too, where he got dumped to the bench. Yeah. A little bit throughout the sort of early part of the year, probably didn't sit very well with him, and he's really sort of, you know, pushing the envelope now and getting back to prime form.
Well, he's 32 years old himself as well, so he's no spring chicken. But to, you know, for his size, to pull out 80 minutes and be the top tackler and be the top, you know, run meters a couple of weeks in a row is rare. Is very rare. So,
well, especially for a prop forward, and that's me getting through that amount of work. That's that's Payne Huss like.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But Payne Huss is 10 years younger than him. So,
yeah, exactly.
Your dart of the week.
Look, to me, it was St. George.
Yeah.
I mean, they've lost seven of their last nine, and I guess they're sort of, yeah. I guess the blip on that radar was the absolute destruction of the Broncos last week.
They look
totally out of sorts. Like I talked about it there just not that long ago. With their early season form was terrific. Yep. What the hell has dropped off? Like that game over the Easter weekend where they absolutely just beat the living you know what out of Newcastle. Just physicality. Where's that gone?
I know that
you can't maintain that for the whole season. Where has that gone?
I don't know, but I keep – it's funny, like you said about the tipping. I think I keep tipping them on the pure fact of that how great they were at the start of the year, and that obviously hasn't left my mind kind of thing. So
they've just fallen off a cliff.
They have. I don't know. You know, the makeup of the side really hasn't changed that much. So. No.
But that's the thing, you know, it came out a couple of weeks ago that they're looking to shift Duffy on. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Why? I don't understand why. Now it's come out this week that they've said to Corey Norman that they're not interested
Corey,
in re-signing him.
The only reason
I can see that for him is his gigantic pay packet.
That's exactly right.
And that's all that is. It's cost cutting. But the problem to me is okay, fair enough. You're moving on from those guys. Where is the answer at 1-6? Because if the answer was already at the club and these guys are clearly out of favour with Anthony Griffin, why is he not playing the answer?
No,
why is he not putting them in at first grade if he thinks he has the answer at those two positions?
I don't think he does, personally.
So that means that they're going in into the market, right? And going out into the market is a total crapshoot.
Considering the other, you know, late news that broke that I don't think they do because they're not standing. Witt have come back and he said he wants to come back to play in Australia again, and then they had a clause in the contract that if he comes back, they'll get sort of first dibs, and they said no, we don't want him. So I don't think they have the answer for 1-6. I mean, the Matt Duffy thing, we said it last week, that doesn't make sense. A Corey Norman kind of does because he's in and out of form and a huge contract. So
they've started to, you know, like his manager already straight up has started to shop Corey Norman around, and apparently he's not getting the nibbles back that they thought that they were going to get from him. So there's a very distinct possibility that he could be going to the Super League.
All of those ones we mentioned, just they're not going to get what they got, what they are on now. They're
no,
not
going to get
none of that there. And the only one that glaringly stands out that needs to do something to change
Anthony Milford.
Anthony Milford. I think he needs to have a 1-year contract and just like literally get $300,000 or $400,000 and then show everybody what he can actually do. Because
I think it's the fact
not a multi year. I think a one year would be perfect.
I think it's just it's he needs to get out of Brisbane.
Yeah, he needs to get out of Brisbane.
One or two years in the Super League could do him the world a good.
Well, it could be a lot of these guys. Really, there's five guys we mentioned.
I would always think of that. You know, okay, if are they so stubborn and so pig-headed that they're just like, no, absolutely not. I don't want to go to England for a year or 2 years. Where if you're young enough, and even if you're coming into your late 20s, if you've got time on your side, go over there for a year and go over there and dominate.
Well, Jackson Hastings.
That's got to be the thinking, right? Go over there. You know you're a first grader. And going over to England, yeah. I don't that they obviously think it is such a huge drop off, but I don't think, you know, as no. much Super League as I watch, I really don't think there's that much of a drop off. No, I really don't.
I think it's a lot more physical, to be completely honest, in this, the Super
this
League.
This country, absolutely, and the NRL is a lot more physical. But if you can go over there and you can, and if especially if you're an attacking player, you can do what a Ben
well,
Barber.
Look at,
Ben Barber won the Man of Steel over there.
Yeah, well, funny.
Do you know what I mean? You can go over there and you can dominate.
Funny
dude,
you
Matt
say
Bowen,
that. He's,
Matty Bowen went over there at the tail end of his career.
Yeah.
And Wigan made two grand finals with him there.
Funny you say that. Ben Barber's playing for the representative Mackay squad this weekend. He's got permission
Is he
through.
He playing like the curtain raiser or something for the AFL?
No. He's playing rugby league. He's playing against the Toowoomba Clydesdales in the fall. Like, in that new sort of competition, which is after they won the Foley Shield. So he's actually playing rugby league. So I was sort of shocked because basically the QRL said they don't – he's not registered to the QRL. They're never going to register him, they said. But they said they can't stop community football, which is what that technically is, even though it's representative. So it's just funny you say that. But the other one that proved, I thought – like Barber was at Jackson Hastings as well. Like he's gone over right. young and killed it. So he wants to come back, and there was, you know, his name keeps getting mentioned sort of everywhere.
Yeah,
so
exactly. If you've got time on your side, if you've got the youth, that any Super League teams will snap you up in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they would.
You know, they don't mind the expats coming over there and
you'll get money.
Positions.
This is why I don't get it. You'll get decent money. So,
and that's the thing too, like the cash over there is terrific. It's just what could be, you know, you're going over there technically in summer, you know, to play footy over there, even though it'd still be, you know, quite cool. You know, you're in England, for God's sakes, but it just they clearly there must be that this whether it's just a notion that they think that the Super League is just so far below them that they would almost rather just run around in reserve grade here in Australia rather than going over there and playing in England. It boggles the mind.
It does, because I mean, to me, the mentality, if that was the case, then why are all these England players coming over here? And not,
exactly.
not so much
they're
why
what,
are they coming over
they're,
here.
Yeah,
sorry,
that's right. But they want to test themselves against the best of the best.
Yeah, sorry, but I'll rephrase
it. It's only
that.
The elite players, though.
No,
it's
yeah,
not
sorry.
Everybody flooding over here.
No, yeah, no, sorry, but I'll rephrase that. What I'm getting at is they're coming over here because they're getting noticed over there. So it's not like it's second tier football. They're getting noticed here. They're not probably getting noticed. You know, these players wouldn't be getting noticed right in like you said, in reserve grade. But if you're getting noticed in English Super League like these English players are, and they're getting signed to come over here, that it works. Huh. No, I agree. I think the Dragons. I had the Dragons down as well. I don't. They've fallen off a cliff because, and I'm picking honestly. I think I'm picking still at the start of the year, but I don't know who they got next week. But I'm 99% certain I'm not going to pick them. But I do not, depending on who they have next week. So
they're the 5:30 game on Saturday against the Raiders.
Yeah, I'll take Canberra in that one. So we've already mentioned it a couple of times, but yeah, Boyd Cordner's officially announced his retirement. Obviously, he was pretty sort of emotional during it. So he come out, he said he did everything possible to come back. And even I think Trent Robertson come out and said 5 weeks ago he was still, you know, six or eight weeks ago. He'd come out and he was still training and everything, but then Trent Robertson come out and said 5 weeks ago they knew things weren't right because he wasn't even close to starting to play. So said this last year. I mean,
yeah. This year, I think the writing was on the wall where they gave him basically the whole off season off. After how he ended his season last year and basically the first half of this year. I think the writing was on the wall, honestly.
Doesn't this – I think – I mean, yeah, we said, like, you could – He got so many, he got hit so much in that Origin game and the way he got up. And,
but
and
even that, last year, there was the game against the Broncos where he got pulled and then he tried to play the ball and he just totally dropped the ball in front of him and fell over. And it's like, oh, that's that. See, the optics of that didn't look good at all. And it's like this could spell the beginning of the end, really.
These are the little things for the NRL, the justification of why they're clamping down. We're not going to go into this retirement. Who's the other Rooster?
Well, look, he's joining Jake Friend.
Jake Friend.
And obviously Brett Morris, but his is a different issue. But you know, Jake Friend's the same. And unfortunately, you know who I think is going in the same way is Wade Graham.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do.
He's had four severe head knocks this year.
Yeah.
And he could be going in the same way.
Yeah. You mentioned someone before. I think for the Raiders fullback.
Charles Nicol Clockstad.
Yeah.
From the outside looking in, mm-hmm. he just doesn't look like he's if they don't think that he's going to come back at all this year, then he's clearly still suffering symptoms.
So, and it justifies
it. He's right. You bring him back in a heartbeat.
Yeah, correct. So, Boyd Corner, I mean, I think we were tipping this last year when we were sort of writing his retirement speech last year, basically for him. But he, to me, was one of those players that... Yeah, I know, but you know, concussion. It's like the was it that Luke Kirshner from over in the NFL? He was 29 and at the top of his game, and he's retired as well.
Oh, Luke Kuechly, yeah, that's
Kuechly,
right.
Sorry,
yeah, from the Carolina Panthers, right.
So, he, to me, I'm not saying he's going to go down as one of the greats, but he definitely soft-spoken person, but just didn't matter. He did his talking on the field. It's just, I felt he was always consistent. Very consistent player.
The gaps between his poor games and his great games was very small.
And that was a difference. It wasn't like he was the world beater and he changed games and everything like that. But
he captained his state and his country and his club.
Yeah.
You know, he's played 20 tests for Australia.
Yeah.
He had 16 Origins. 181 first grade games. He's a three-time premiership winner. The same thing. We said it at the start of the year, and I think we said it at last. He's got nothing left to prove, honestly.
No.
He has done everything that you would want to in this game.
Yeah. No, he has done everything. I mean, he clearly loved the game, and he probably just thought like he could still do it, so which is rare to sort of see, but... You know, because it took him basically really look at it a whole year to decide this. You know, this is when it sort of happened late and mid last year as well. So, sorely missed, but completely makes sense. I would have done the same thing if I was exactly in the same position. But I would have done it earlier. But
he said he's for once in his life he's had to put family in front of football. And
right.
When you're at that sort of age, like that would be such a tough decision to make. But from what I've heard and what I've read, the Roosters are paying his contract out.
Yeah, and
they're paying him this year and next year.
Yeah,
full.
And they'll
That's the loyalty that they're showing to him.
What's interesting enough to me is they'll they're gonna have money to play with. I know we all say about the Roosters and what they think, but
they've always got money to play with. What are you talking about?
I knew you were going to say that. So,
Uncle Nick Politis, he knows how to fudge the books.
Morris, you know, not much money, but Cordner would have been on some decent coin, you would think. So,
And Jake Friend,
yeah, that's the third one as well. So, and just the other bit of news just to finish up, you know, may as well stay on the Roosters, was Victor Radley.
This news is great. This is so good.
So he's I think he was at he went to watch Manly to one of his mates play in a first grade game over at Manly. because he had that big cheeky grin and that, as I'm noticing, just the timeline of what happened. Then he flew to, I think, something that it was Gold Coast, something was happening in Byron Bay, like a friend's whatever that was happening. Then he's clearly has still felt the effects from Byron Bay to Gold Coast because he's got on the plane and talked loudly or too loudly enough to...
Supposedly talking loudly and laughing, and he got the flick.
Yeah. So
I think still suffering the effects of extreme alcohol consumption, shall we say.
I do think that.
Well, you just don't get booted off a plane for speaking loudly and laughing. Because if you do, then some of the people that I've seen on planes, you know, coming back from work from Mount Isa back to Townsville should absolutely have not have been on planes.
No, but they probably don't yell and curse, and we don't know what happened.
Some of the behavior that I've seen at the Mount Isa airport is pretty bad, and that's from guys that are still sitting there in their work uniform representing their company. And yet some of the things, you're just like, oh my God, like, you know, at least take your work shirt off, you bozo. Like, it's unbelievable. When you've got your company embroidered on your work shirt.
What do you think of, you know, and this is not a string of things, but it's basically I don't know what to call that Broncos game, but the whatever he was thinking in that Broncos game to, you know, them missing out on Origin to then
self-control.
Well, what do you think? Is it self-control? Is it that? Is it as simple
as
that?
That's all I can see it as. Like, he couldn't regulate himself to be able to tone it down against that. Yeah, like we're talking about that Brisbane game a few weeks ago.
But he also
that's got him suspended at the SCG. This now that he's clearly serving a suspension, but can't help himself but to go out and get on the piss and act like a knob. And get booted off a plane. Like, do you know what I mean? And apparently he had to take the plane home the next day with all the Roosters executives, which would have been uncomfortable to say the least.
Plus, he also come out straight after when he got suspended and said, "No, I'm not changing my game."
I'm not changing my game. It's a little bit of stubbornness as well. But yeah, to me, it's just self-control regulation. He's going to be a liability if he continues to act in this way and is constantly on the sideline. He's a liability.
I think he is a liability because he's a great player.
He would have been, with no doubt, he would have been in this Origin side.
Oh, no, he was in the Origin side up until this, and he still might be in the Origin side, depending. So, I mean,
that's right. I think, well, and that's the thing.
He's only 23.
Do you disrupt the Blues chemistry by, you know, it'll only be through injury that he'll get in there.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, I mean, he's not someone, well, it depends. He's someone you could probably, well, possibly, you know, although Tariq Sims had a brilliant game, so.
And look, he backed up too. And, yeah, you know, while he was a little underwhelming against the Bulldogs this week on Monday, but it just, Sims was the ultimate professional, and you could see why they put him in there, and he played fairly. Oh, he didn't let anybody down.
That cut-out pass was brilliant.
You pick and stick, really.
Sorry, I mentioned, it was a previous altercation that Victor Radley was in late last year when he went to a party at Byron Bay and he got suspended for two games and a 20,000 fine. He might have to just lay off the drink, clearly. So.
Well, yeah, does he have an alcohol problem? This well, is maybe. The thing. Is he one of those guys that just can't handle his piss?
It's possible, because they looked at the photos from Friday when he was down at Manly watching his mate play, and they reckon he looked like that and stayed on that from Friday up until getting on that plane at Gold Coast on Sunday.
He's left to his own devices as well, because whether or not he's going to – I'm sure he's still going to training, but that's – I mean, he doesn't have – He doesn't have the extra added duties of, hey, I've got to play this weekend, so I probably should stay off the sauce. But see, obviously that's not just registering in his head.
I know. See, that's the other weird thing I don't get. I know you don't clamp players down and tell them, no, you can't do this, this, and this, and you've got to stay in the state and all that. But
somebody's got to get in his ear and just go, look, you know, mate, just tone it down. And you know, maybe I go off previous experience. Maybe he doesn't like eating before he goes out on the drink, and you know, that's a recipe for disaster that I know all too commonly about. But that could be a thing too. Like, you know, maybe his body just can't handle the alcohol.
That's exactly right. Yeah, no, that's exactly right.
Have something to eat before you go out. Easy.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's too late when you're already out and have something to eat. It's too late.
Or you have something to eat just before it, and then you,
Trust me, I know.
Oh,
Clancy's pie and a sausage roll while you're out, it's too late.
No. I'm saying before you start drinking. I had a decent lamb shank last Friday before I obliterated a half a bottle of Bailey's along with a beer of bourbon. So, but that's a whole different story. That is it for this week's NRL pod. Don't forget our socials, as always, at Final Play Pod, Facebook, where everything pops up all the time for us, obviously, which is pretty easy to find, Final Play Podcast, where you can get our pods as well as gimco.com.au. You gave him a shout out before talking of box breaks before we got on. So, NBA box break, sorry. So, we'll have an NBA one coming sort of soon after this. Because that's delving deep to me in that NRL, depends what you want to call it, round two.
Conference semis.
Everyone calls it sort of different. Once they wrap up, but there's been I've liked this conference semis on both East and West.
Yeah.
Yeah. Compared to the first round, at least, anyway, so.
Well, I guess it's always like that. You always have your fizzes in the first round, you know, just purely on the fact that, you know, based on the seeding, so... generally you do get a lot of a lot of fizzes and the teams that finish a little bit closer together in the seedings are a lot better series. But yeah, no, all four series in the conference semis are sort of, especially now that they're sort of a lot of already halfway through, that they're looking to be the goods, and it's the best of the best.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think so. And that's the way it's sort of playing out so far. So, well, close to, but we'll wait and see.
It's all about who you want to, especially when it comes to the Western Conference. It's about who you want to trust.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's it for me. My name's Jason. Oh, get off the sauce, Bradley Smith. Get off that sauce because you need to, because you're a good player and you're only 23. So you're right. Someone has to get in his ear. I think it's as simple as that.
And look, if it's going to cost him, you know, Origin jerseys and stuff like that, I'm Miles. Stay on the sauce, Victor Radley Plum.
Stay on the sauce. Yeah, we know why you're saying that. So that's okay. That's fine.
And look, next week we'll be in the same room. So if you together instead of doing this via the internet. So if you want to purchase yourself a bottle of Bailey's next week's NRL pod should be quite interesting.
Sure, we can do that. Just a shout out to where I work. I might have to use our corporate credit card, but anyway, sure.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how to write it off, but we'll find out.
we'll be hitting Palmer Street before we go out.
Palmer Street. During the week. Yeah, awesome.
Trust me, I don't want to go anywhere near Flinders Street. No way.
Oh, bet. Probably not after like the last Origin, so.
I think they'll still be suffering the ramifications from that. Maybe go to Tiny Mountain Brewery or something like that.
All right, nice. All right, have a good week, everyone.
All right, see ya.